The Untouchable Adolescence, Lost Sci-Fi Short Stories from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, Book 367, written by Harlan Ellison, narrated by Scott Miller. The planet Diamor hung round and gaudy in the viewplates, as colorfully unchanging as it had been every day for the 2 weeks since the Wallower had plopped out of Inverspace near it. Captain Luther Shreve started violently as the whine of the stress potential banks died away. They had been a constant noisemaker during the past 2 weeks. Their continual dull rhythm had come to seem companionable. Now the keening discordancy was ended, and he knew they had finished estimating the planet in the plates. He sat very still, staring at the energy dials building their reserves back up. The banks had used much extra power. He sat very still, waiting for them to bring him the plates. He didn't want to see them. He was a full captain in the merchant arm of the commercial navy, and he found the tough outer shell of himself that had formed during 30 years in that service suddenly disintegrating. He was afraid of what those plates would say. The tube glowed behind him, and Teller, slightly overweight, slightly florid, slightly balding, and a brilliant psych officer, stepped off the plate into the control room. Teller slumped onto the co-pilot's couch, extended the sheaf of plate readings. Luther Shreve tipped his cap back on his head with a practiced thumb and shuffled the plates in silence. From time to time, his pink tongue washed across his lips. Finally, he sighed and rubbed weary fingers across the bridge of his nose. He closed his eyes and slowly sank back against the cushions. With eyes still closed, he voiced the final possibility. Any room for error? He had tried to keep the tenseness from his voice, but it somehow doubled in the faintly resonating confines of the control room. Teller shook his head. They tell me no, Luther. I ran the plates up for them, mainly because they were all afraid to be here when you saw the sad news. You terrorize those poor backroom boys, Luther. Teller looked across, saw the odd set to Shreve's face, and realized his jibes were annoying the other. He swung his short legs over the side of the couch with a thump, clasped his hands in his lap as though about to recite. They have somewhere less than 5 months. Then the big push comes. The eruptions will wipe out 9/10 of the centers of community. He leaned across and pulled one sheet from the stack Shreve held. Here's the position map. He indicated with quick, short jabs of his finger where the first earthquakes would hit, and followed blue lines to their terminuses. He extended his hands, palms upward, in a movement of futility and sadness. Shreve sat forward sharply. He swept the cap from his head with one hand, ran the other through stringy brown hair. He pursed his lips, muttered, "We've got to do something. It's more than just business potential ruin. There are people down there, Carl. Millions of them. We can't let them die." "True," Teller stated simply, looking at his clasped hands. "But," he added, "what about the itinerary? They'll scream bloody blazes back there if you break schedule." He cocked a thumb toward the rear of the ship, toward Earth. "Carl, I've been pushing one of these cans for merch arm over 30 years. It'll be 31 in August. I've never broken a schedule in my life, but this is something more important than bills of lading and sales curves." His face had tightened, the character lines about his mouth standing forth. "We've got to save them, Carl. We've got to help those people down there." Teller exhaled heavily. "All right, Luther, it's your choice. But you'd better produce something from those natives down there, or Murchar might get unpleasant." Shreve nodded. His face sagged into weariness momentarily. Then he straightened and depressed the public address stud on the couch arm. His orders were brief and direct. An hour later, shift time, the great Wallower fired.